discussion at two meetings of the governing body, the public official can be required to disclose the conflict at both meetings. HB 2585 would weaken the disclosure requirements by allowing the public official to disclose the conflict in only one meeting and then to discuss the matter at subsequent meetings without repeating the disclosure. This would seriously mislead members of the press and the public who happen to miss the single meeting where the disclosure is made, and I don't think that the Dash 1 amendments cure that. In sum, HB 2585 would significantly weaken current conflict of interest disclosure requirements for legislators, appointed public officials, and elected public officers.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Mrs. Marbet. Anyone else wish to testify on House Bill 2585? If not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2585 and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2585.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Nemec?
I've moved the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2585.
Colleagues, we've got a motion to move the Dash 1 amendments. Any
to the motion?
Yes, Mr. Nemec.
I'd like to first explain that the Hammond Gross version that you have has one other technical error on it. Existence should have been lined out on line 9 of the Hammond Gross version to make it consistent with the Dash 1 amendment. I also want to explain there's a difference between actual conflict of interest and potential conflict of interest. If somebody has an actual conflict of interest, they can never participate. They cannot vote. And this bill doesn't change that. So it doesn't matter whether they say something or not. They can't vote. It's only the potential conflict of interest, the gray zone, where we say, wait a minute now, you have to disclose, or if you disclose the first time you're dealing with the matter. There is not this continuing obligation to disclose. But anybody can ask, and then you have to explain the nature. It's an attempt to balance this out in terms of citizen participation, and I do think that's an important explanation. Otherwise, I think that's going to do the trick, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other comments on the motion?
I'm not sure I'm comfortable voting for this today. I'm just happy to vote for the amendments, but if we need to make sure you got your, I don't know what Jefferson Devlin's doing or Richmond Edwards.
Seven. Seven.
So maybe Jefferson
Edwards. I'll the motion if
that's I'll support the amendment.
Oh,
yeah. I'm not ready to vote still out.
Thank you,
sir. Before we get too far.
You're not going to vote for it?
Here we go.
Okay, just the last violin.
Saving the day. She's all you.
It's like the Marines landing, isn't it?
I prefer to think of it as the cavalry for President Edwards.
We've got a motion on the floor here to move the Dash 1 amendment. Any further discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, Dash 1 amendments are moved. The bill, Representative Mannix.
I move that the bill as amended with the Dash 1 amendments be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
We've got a motion to move House Bill 2585 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I spoke to the bill already, and I support what the bill is frankly trying to accomplish because of the impact it has on people who are serving on local government boards and commissions. I don't disagree, in fact, with some of the testimony offered by Mr. Marbet in the general sense. And I don't believe this is frankly an issue that we want to see break down on a party line sort of a vote, because this is not a partisan issue. This is, frankly, an issue about making sure we have protections amply in place, both for the public to understand conflicts of interest of people who are serving in government capacities, but at the same time making sure that we provide reasonable methods by which those conflicts can be declared and to avoid traps for the unwary who are serving on these committees. So I will, with that statement, indicate that I am likely going to vote yes on this. But I'm willing to work with both Mr. Marbet and anybody else, frankly, who wants to talk about what kinds of things maybe we could do to make this better. And if the representative offering the motion wanted to stall it out a little bit, I'd be willing to support him in that too. Okay.
Any other comments from the committee? Seeing none, Mr. Wells, you want to call the roll? Well,
we're in order.
Right in the middle of it, anyway.
Representative
Atkinson?
Aye. Representative Beck?
No, and serve notice of the possible minority report.
Representative Meyer?
Aye.
Representative Desmond?
No.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Nance?
Aye.
Representative Piercy?
Excuse.
Representative Spar?
Aye.
Representative Welch?
Aye.
Representative Wood?
Both aye.
Chair Simmons?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman? Yes, for the record, since Representative Beck will need a second member on the committee, I will join in as a member of the committee.
The motion passes. Representative Manick, would you like to carry your bill? Thank you. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2585.
We have one more piece of business before us today, colleagues. It is Senate Bill 368, and staff, have you pulled the sign-up sheet for Senate Bill 368? We will not be getting to the 3285, the ombudsman piece today. In case there are people here waiting, I apologize for not putting that on the record earlier. I did notify some people who I thought would be here for that reason. And Mr. Moore, we had this before us once previously, colleagues. It hasn't changed, actually, so we don't need unless Mr. Moore wants to comment on the amendment. Disrepeat the amendment, and Griffin as well. Let me have some word for us about the amendment.
Chair Simmons, I ask that local government that in here is able to take the amendment today, and not
we have Mr. Snyder and from AOC here who could have nice to ask. He did sign up, so Mr. Snyder, if you want to come up and explain the A4 amendment to Senate Bill
368. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Paul Snyder, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. I've had a chance to look at the -4 amendments, and they do what we had asked. In other words, in the last hearing, it would restore local governments to the voters' pamphlet, which was the concern that we had had previously. And we would, of course, support the -4 amendments and hope the committee would adopt them.
And what do they do?
Mr. Chair, they would restore the current law, I believe, the current law as it is before Senate Bill 368, such that any county or city office or elected office of a metropolitan service district could provide information for the stakeholders' pamphlet to be included. Our primary concern, frankly, is the county. We alerted the League of Cities to the provisions of this bill, but to my knowledge, they have not made an appearance, so I don't know if it's an issue for them. I believe that's also the case for the Metropolitan Service District. So for us, it's a county issue. And for counties, we would like the opportunity to continue to have both candidates and ballot measures in the state voters' pamphlet. We did discuss this issue a little bit with the Secretary of State's office and with other county clerks. And as I indicated, our preference would be for the committee to adopt the -4
four amendments. But if there were not an inclination on the part of the committee to do that, something that would be beneficial to counties that do not currently publish their own voter pamphlets, and I believe there are about 20 of them, for those counties that didn't publish their own voter pamphlets, perhaps the direction the committee might go that the Secretary of State's office, I think, would object to less, that we wouldn't like as much, might be to provide that a county that did not publish its own voter's pamphlet could then include information on candidates and ballot measures in the state voter's pamphlet.
Thank you very much. Mr. Snyder, I did call my own county clerk, Millie Bogue, in the Grant, and visited with her about this very subject, whether or not she was interested in amendments that actually put the counties back in, and she indicated to me no. And they do not publish a independent county voter pamphlet in Union County. And so that was kind of a telling thing for me. Has there been some confusion in the past if there are two voter pamphlets and one's a county one, one's a state one, and somebody misses a deadline here and gets in there, or and one voter pamphlet would look like somebody's running unopposed when in fact they really aren't? Can you elaborate on any of that?
Sure, I will defer to the county clerk.
Well,
I believe there has been some confusion with that.
But,
for the record, I'm Annette Newingham, Lane County election official.
Mm-hmm.
You have a letter before you from the Board of Commissioners from Lane County, and their position is to support it with these amendments. We do not produce the state or county voters pamphlet, and there is definitely concern that we would not have an opportunity to be able to have candidates at least before the citizens in some manner and form, and would certainly support the having that in there. We do not do both, so we don't have the situation where you can have it in both a local one and the state one. But I know that Georgette Brown from Josephine County does have that situation.
And we have a volunteer here, Georgette Brown. You identify yourself directly if you'd like to say
hi. Georgette Brown, Josephine County Clerk. And as far as the issue is concerned, I would feel fine with having it both ways as far as the counties who do not publish a voter's pamphlet, their county officials being in the state one. But the ones who do, their officials should not be in both. I think I misspoke here. Okay. if the county is producing a voter's pamphlet, then all the county elected or the candidates should be in the county one and not in the state one, because it does produce, in our county it has produced some problems, because it has produced confusion where some of the candidates were not aware, even though we put out the information to them, that they could be in both the state and the local voters pamphlet. And so in our sheriff's race, which was a very contested race, one of the candidates got in the state pamphlet and in our local one, and the other one just in the local pamphlet. And that was confusing to them. So, but for the counties who do not produce the voter's pamphlet, then I think they should be allowed to be in the state voter's pamphlet as the candidate.
And the amendment supports don't specify.
Mm-hmm.
It just allows it for anyone, as I understand.
Yeah, and that can be confusing.
Well, Mr. Chair, it would require a different set of amendments to accomplish that. The Dash 4 amendments, as I understand it, restores the law to the way it is today. So anybody could initiate a voter sample. But what we're suggesting is that if you don't choose the court to adopt the Dash 4 amendment, to deal with the counties that don't have a voter pamphlet at all, in order to get their issues before the voters, and the appropriate way to go would be to authorize those counties to do that, as Ms. Brown is going to say. Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I would like to entertain a conceptual, but I'm not sure where the place it is, but to take care of what we've talked about here.
Mm-hmm. I would also like to, nobody who's in this room today because of term limits is, was privy to the discussion in the 1995 session that established the rules that are, as they are in, Senate Bill 368. Provided in that 1993 session when this was done. And Ms. Seelock was part of that discussion, and I'd like to have some discussion about cost, about that, what issues were on the table at that time. Ms. Seelock, if you'd be willing to come forward.
Chair Simmons, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Colleen Seelock. I'm the Director of Elections for the state. In 1993, the legislature was concerned about trying to cut state general fund costs and was looking at different avenues of how they could do that. And it was proposed at that time that the state voters pamphlet really was a state document. We had counties participating in creating the local county election pamphlets. When the county produces a pamphlet, it must cover all of the cities in the county and all the districts in the county. So it goes far beyond what was ever eligible to be in the state voters pamphlet. Many counties took advantage of that, and when there was the two-year window in 94 and 96 where counties and cities and metros were not eligible to be in the state pamphlet, the number of counties that printed voters pamphlets went up to 20. In 1998, when they were once again, and keep in mind that in 1997, the House floor passed this very same bill. The Senate floor passed this very same bill. The Senate has already looked at this bill this year and has passed it. But when that problem occurred where the bills weren't identical and weren't the same number, so it didn't become law, in 1998, the cities and counties then were able to return. And let me point out, the cities, there are only 9 cities that are eligible to be in the pamphlet. And I know that there's somewhere around 253, somewhere around that number of cities. So there's an awful lot of cities that are not eligible to be in the state pamphlet. We lost 4 counties. 4 counties chose not to print their local version. And so the concern that the Secretary of State's office has about returning either to the original language as proposed or the compromised language is we understand counties are really under the pressure economically. And with counties, they are able to bill back to their districts the cost of the county pamphlet. So if cities participate in it, they have a more equitable way of recovering their cost. But our concern is that you could potentially see more counties give up or turn away from producing local pamphlets. Now, there are many that will never turn away from that because voters find that they are such an important document. But in 1993, the bulk of the discussion was this is a state pamphlet. Let's return it to the level of a state pamphlet. And if counties and city governments want to have a pamphlet, that should be produced locally. That was basically the essence of the argument in 1993.
Ms. Seelock, when some cases of state voter pamphlets cover several jurisdictions and, or several counties,
mm-hmm.
How much more costly is it then, and is it when all the local races are included also?
Chair Simmons, it's very difficult to figure costs. In fact, in 1998, we had 104 candidates from the county, cities, and metro districts that we printed in the pamphlet. With that number of candidates, it's sort of a break-even. And the difficulty we have in generating a cost for you is because of the exact way you phrase your question. We have multiple counties in one. Obviously, Multnomah County, Lane County, Marion County, those counties, the state pamphlet is printed for that individual county. And so it's very difficult to come up with a cost. 1998, the state did not lose any dollars in revenue, but it added to the problem of generating two books in the general election versus one. So that's the continual risk that you face is as the number of candidates grow and take advantage of being in the state chamber, it expands the opportunity or the pressure for us to go to two books. And so it's very difficult to put a dollar amount on it. We've spent since last week trying to come up with a way that we could give you real dollar figures. And we've worked with economists in the past, state economists in the past, trying to somehow get a handle on voter pamphlet costs, and it's very, very difficult. So I apologize, I can't give you a specific dollar.
Questions on the committee?
Thank you very much. Mr. Lloyd Marbet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee. My name is Lloyd Marbet, and I appear before you today in joint testimony with Dan Neat, who, again, I have to apologize, he had a medical appointment. We are representing the Coalition for Initiative Rights in opposition to SB 368 as it is currently written. And since I've testified before you, I will not bother to repeat what we're all about.
Marbet. Could you summarize? We have a copy of your written testimony here. Could you summarize for us?
I'm planning on only reading portions of the testimony, so it'll be a summary. SB 386 unnecessarily places the Oregon voter pamphlet in severe jeopardy. We suggest several changes to eliminate provisions that would allow any Secretary of State to impair the current opportunity for interested persons to present ballot measure arguments in the voter pamphlet and have those arguments distributed to all voters. First section we address is section 15. If these changes take place, it would allow the Secretary of State to stop mailing the Oregon voter pamphlet to each elector. Note that it first strikes out the current statutory requirement that the Secretary of State, quote, shall cause the voter pamphlet to be mailed to each post office mailing address in Oregon, unquote. Note that it then states that the Secretary of State by rule, quote, may prescribe methods for distributing any state voter's pamphlet, including but not limited to the pamphlet to each elector, unquote. The new language does not require the Secretary of State to prescribe any methods at all. We are told that the purpose of this section is merely to allow the Secretary of State to mail the Oregon voter's pamphlet to voters residing where the election is taking place. For example, during the special election to fill 3rd District congressional seat vacated by Ron Wyden, the Secretary of State apparently believed that he had to distribute the Oregon voter pamphlet statewide. Unfortunately, the language in Senate Bill 368 goes far beyond correcting this perceived problem and offers any current or future Secretary of State the opportunity to distribute the voter pamphlet in any manner he chooses, whether or not that includes mailing it to voters. The Secretary of State could merely decide to distribute the voter pamphlet by dropping it to post offices or grocery store parking lots. To solve the asserted problem regarding the scope of distribution and eliminate this opportunity for the Secretary of State to stop mailing the Oregon voter pamphlet to all addresses in the area, we would propose the substitute language that you see below. The second section that we're concerned about is section 18, which allows the Secretary of State to reduce the size of all arguments on ballot measures in the voter pamphlet or not print them at all. ORS 251.255 expressly requires that arguments on ballot measures submitted to the Secretary of State with a specified payment of number of validated signatures shall be printed on 28.9.8 square inches of the voter pamphlet. Section 18 strikes that entire section and replaces it with language that does not expressly require the Secretary of State to print the voter's pamphlet, in the voter's pamphlet, any ballot measure arguments. And I'll skip again going through those sections. There is nothing in the amended provisions that requires the Secretary of State to print any argument. Compare that to the existing language, which expressly states that the argument shall be printed. even if the courts were to imply from the above language a requirement that the Secretary of State print ballot measure arguments in the voter's pamphlet, he could drastically dilute their effectiveness by reducing their size from the current specified 29.8 square inches to whatever he wants, as long as it does not exceed 30 square inches or 325 words. It would certainly save a few cents if the ballot measure arguments were limited to, say, 5 or 10 square inches or were limited to, say, 50 words. That would allow more than two to be printed on each page of the Oregon voters pamphlet. The current Secretary of State has frequently commented upon his desire to reduce the cost of the voters pamphlet. SB 268 would allow him to accomplish that goal by shortchanging those who submit ballot measure arguments. We would propose that Section 18 be deleted. Continuing on, the Senate Bill 368 would increase the cost of measure arguments by a minimum of 67% in fees and 150% in signatures. As shown above, SB 368 allows the Secretary of State to cut the size of any measure argument by whatever degree he chooses. But Section 18 of the bill also requires that he increase the fee from $300 to $500, and also increase the number of verified signatures from 1,000 to 2,500. Note that these increased fees and signature requirements would not entitle the person submitting the argument to the 29.8 square inches the current law guarantees. Instead, it would entitle a person to whatever space the Secretary of State happens to want. Decreasing the space for an argument while raising the cost is consistent with the Secretary of State's stated desire to reduce the number of arguments and the size of the voter sample. His bill before the legislature, HB 2208, specifies that no more than one argument would be allowed supporting or opposing a measure. The opponents, and then this goes on to describe the rest of that bill, and we'll bypass that. I'll note, though, that while I was sitting here in the room, I got to thinking about the last legislative session, and I went into my computer to check on bills that were sponsored in the last legislative session, and there was a bill in the last legislature, House Bill 2202, which basically did propose to do similar to what Senate 368 proposes to do. And at that time, we offered testimony, which I'd like to share with you. The Coalition for Initiative Rights believes that providing access to the voter pamphlet is a vital part of the democratic process, which should be borne not only by those citizens providing arguments, but by taxpayers as well. Increasing the cost of individual arguments should be justified to help defray expenses, and only if it is first shown that it will not stifle access to the voter pamphlet or turn it into a vehicle of communication solely for vested interests. Increasing the signature requirements is not justified, for at 1,000 signatures it is already clearly indicates enough voter support, and I think that testimony would still hold today. The next section of my testimony addresses Section 9, which authorized the Secretary of State to put the Oregon voter pamphlet, quote, any information the Secretary of State considers relevant, unquote. This is a blank check for him to present to all voters his views on the initiative process, which we would likely disagree, or on any other subject that he, quote, considers relevant, unquote. First, relevant as to what is not defined. First, relevant is not defined. Second, even if the courts were to infer that the information must be relevant to the election, note that Senate Bill 368 does not limit this other information to that which is actually relevant to the election. It allows the Secretary of State to insert and print as prominently as he chooses any information that he considers relevant, thus delegating to the Secretary of State the judgment as to relevance. This is not proper delegation to a partisan political office holder. We recommend removing the addition of subsection F from Senate Bill 368. Then the next section that we address, or basically the last section we address, is Section 13, which would cut the space allowed for political party statements in the Oregon voter pamphlet while increasing their cost. In Section 13, Senate Bill 368 would also cut the size of the political party statements in the voter's pamphlet from 119.2 square inches to 60 square inches for a major party, or 30 square inches for a minor party that has nominated candidates. The fees for such statements would be increased by 50%. We oppose amending the existing law on this subject, and I thank you for the opportunity to share our testimony with you once more on this matter.
Okay, Mr. Representative Williams?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I was most interested in the point that Mr. Marbet made at the end regarding Section 9, and I guess I would ask maybe if Ms. Pilock could come forward, does the subsection F, any other information the Secretary of State considers relevant? I'm interested in what you're kind of getting at there, because it is kind of a wide door that you walk through, and I'm confident it wasn't meant to be anything other than housekeeping materials with respect to how a person properly votes by absentee or otherwise.
Chair Simmons and Representative Williams, for the record, my name is Colleen Sulak, and I'm the Director of Elections. Representative Williams, you hit the nail right on the head. That was designed to allow the printing of drop sites, the printing now of the mails, the polling locations, things that come up that have not been addressed in the voter stand. That's what it was designed for. There's different language that you would like to offer. That's all it's basically designed is those technical aspects that may happen in an election that we believe voters need to know about. It's not designed to give anybody a substantive opportunity to weigh in on matters that they feel strongly about.
President Davenport. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm.
A clarification on that. When I believe it was Measure 61 that was the determination that the votes would not be counted, I don't know if that was done in time to impact the voter pamphlet, but could something like that be an example? Would you have current authority if for some reason, if for some reason you had something in the measure that either wouldn't appear on the ballot or wouldn't be counted, would this provision have enabled you to indicate that?
Chair Simmons, Representative Devlin, I believe that the voter's pamphlet was already at the printer and already printed. The major ballot, the major book was the first one to be printed. I'd have to go back and look, but we knew that we could not take ballot measure 61 out because it would leave a gaping hole, and so it was left in. But that particular caveat would allow us to address that in a more complete way. I mean, basically what we're looking for is any sort of last-minute changes or things that none of us contemplated that voters need to know. And that's the reason for the word relevant, but we certainly are open to any kind of discussion, whether it be an actual amendment or just the basis of this reference. The intent is only provide information that the elector needs to know in order to conduct an election.
President Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to belabor the point, but it does seem like it might be useful to insert some language in there that tightens it up a little bit. We talk all the time about making a record, and as Mr. Marbet knows, and most of us do, that the court doesn't look at the record unless the court determines first that the language is unambiguous, or the language is ambiguous, and my guess is they'd read this and probably not determine it to be ambiguous. So, I know Mr. Neal is handy, so maybe he's found a magic clue to get us out of this issue. And if he has, that's great. If he hasn't, I'd be interested in maybe just a quick suspension for purposes of amending, and we can probably come up with some language quickly if the chair wanted to move the bill. Did you find the magic clue, Mr.
Chair Simmons, Representative Williams, will let you be the judge of that. What he would offer is any other information, and then strike the Secretary of State. Okay. Any other information the Secretary of State considers?
Yeah. Yeah. Page 3,
line 36.
Line F, sub F, any other information that the Secretary of State considers relevant, and then add to the conduct of the election. Trying to hone in on actual conducting the election, to the conduct of the election.
Yeah.
I'm not certain that cures the problem. I'm sure that we all would draw the association between the conduct of the election and the Secretary of State, but I think it still leaves it open wide enough to where something else could come in unintended. It seems it would be better to identify those areas that specifically have been mentioned as to the kind of information that would come in. I think that would be much more helpful.
Mr. Chairman, I guess this is
Williams.
Thank you. I guess the problem I see with that, Mr. Marbet, is that I don't think that we necessarily want to be back here amending the statute every 2 years when a new situation has arisen, or there is, for example, something changes with respect to drop sites and they want to be able to print that, or we haven't included something that we haven't anticipated. I don't mind giving them a little bit of latitude if we're limiting it to, you know, no statement about the issues that are being voted on, but simply the more technical process of this is how you get to a polling place or those kinds of things. I guess I'm willing to consider the amendments relating to the conduct of the election.
Can you answer the question for Mr. Marbet?
Sure, Simmons, if I could make a comment. Go on.
Do you have a question for you for Mr. Edwards?
Chair Simmons, Representative Williams, I understand the concern you have about this being revisited, but the fact of the matter is if you leave it generalized, you may end up be revisiting it again as well.
Oh, that's possible.
Mr. Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have a question for both the witnesses. One, which is the issue that is raised in Section 15 about the changes regarding the Secretary of State by rule may prescribe methods for distributing any voter, any state voter pamphlet. Ms. Seelock maybe explain again why it is that language is being put in there, and then perhaps you heard the testimony, how can you relate this to my best fears about it?
Chair Simmons, Representative Edwards. Mr. Marbet did an excellent job of describing why that language is in there. It's precisely because we were advised by the Attorney General's Office that if we printed a special election for the 3rd Congressional District race, we would have to distribute that statewide. So that's what that language was meant to imply, is if there is some state pamphlet that is issued that goes to a district that is less than the entire state, that we would be able then to distribute it to the voters in the election. I understand that Mr. Marbet offered some alternative language. We're not opposed to that alternative language. There's no intent here to try to suggest that the voter stamp is probably the most important document that the Secretary of State would not be distributed. So we're not opposed if you conceptually want to adopt those amendments as well. Clearly, I think any Secretary of State who did not distribute the voter stamp that would be hard for me to imagine.
So. Other questions to these witnesses? Thank you very much. And we have Mr. Phil Dreyer.
My name is Phil Dreyer. I pronounce it Dreyer. A lot of people pronounce it Dreyer. Spelled like Dreyer's ice cream. Mr. Dreyer. I'm issues chairman of Oregon Common Cause. I'm also a former member of this legislature. And Common Cause has the same objection that Mr. Marbet. Where Section 15 says the Secretary of State shall cause the voter's pamphlet to be mailed to each post office mailing address in Oregon. That's been deleted. The new language says the Secretary of State by rule may prescribe methods for distributing any state voter's pamphlet, including but not limited to mailing the pamphlet to each elector. Now, the difference between may and shall, we all know, opens the barn door to all sorts of interpretations. I believe very strongly that the voter's pamphlet be mailed to every elector in Oregon. When members of Common Cause go back east, they all talk about the wonderful Oregon system, including our income tax credit for political contributions, and the voters' pamphlet. They're all amazed that Oregon is one of the few states that puts out this voters' pamphlet, and I'd hate to see it diluted. We also object to the increase in fees and the increase in signatures required if somebody wants to get something in the voters' pamphlet on the petition route. And this not only, this doesn't always affect candidates, but it certainly affects ballot issues, and we have a lot of those, and we believe that low-income organizations, income dependent on dues for their total income, should be allowed to go to the petition route and not make it more difficult. 1,000 signatures shows plenty of interest. There's no need to increase it to 1,500. This is an infringement on the right to get on the ballot. That's all I have to say.
Question for Mr. Baird.
Let me ask you.
Yes, Mr. Edwards.
Sir, have you seen the language that was presented to us by Mr. Mabette on Section 15?
On Section 15?
Have you seen what he...
I have the original bill here. Is that...
He prescribed...
Are you talking about an amendment?
He has some...
I have not seen an amendment, no. I think it's got to be mailed. When they say by rule may, that allows them to distribute it the way the Legal Women Voters Voting Guide is distributed. Drop it off at grocery stores. That's not good enough. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think I'm just asking for your input on... I'm sorry, I assume he's got a handout he gave us, page 2.
Okay,
middle,
page 2.
Where he's talking about, it is a shall. So does that address your issue?
A small print, section 12 minutes.
Yeah, I'm sorry, right?
Okay.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay, I just wanted to...
That's what we're for. Shall.
Thank you.
Further questions for Mr. Breyer?
Thank you very much.
Unless there are some.
This is Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to get a clarification from Mr. Lock, if I could.
Mr. Lock, you could have come forward again. Appreciate your patience and forbearance today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The increases in fees and the increases in signatures, were they both the pre-existing law, the sunsetted, but to an extent?
Chair Simmons, Representative Devlin, for the record, I'm Colin Sela, the Director of Elections. Yes, they're identical. They, when in 1993 they had decided that when the fee structure went up, the signature gathering should also go up. And the fees, the current fees that we're now under were adopted in 1983. And so, yes, in 1994 to 1996, he structured this in this bill, and the corresponding signatures was the law.
Well, that was a blip for 2 years, so it didn't last long. I say 1,000 signatures on a petition is enough indication that there's general interest in getting an issue on the ballot.
Listen, Star.
And see, like, during that 2 year period and then post decree, during that 2 year period, did we have more or less people use that manner to get, how many people use the signature method in order to get at that argument in the post?
Chair Simmons, Representative Star, very few. And we can certainly provide you details of that with respect to how many, if there was any change in it, but very few do that. Most just pay the fee.
And Ms. Seelock, how closely does the fee approximate the actual cost?
Chair Simmons, there again, we're back to how much does it cost for a page
and whether you're counting that it goes in all the books.
Right.
I mean, basically, we know that if you take the number of distinctive pages that are contained in all the versions of the book and the total cost, that's about $7,000 a page.
Thank you very much. Further questions to either of these witnesses?
Chair.
Representative Beth.
My mind has wandered in and out as the day has wandered. Succinctly tell me why we are going from shall to may. Or in section 15, what is this issue of not, what's the rationale? She probably said it three times over today, but.
Sir, he's Simmons, Representative Beth. That was to solve the problem when we have like a congressional district race, as we did in the past, where we needed to produce a pamphlet that only went to the third congressional district. And we could not because we had to mail it every Oregon.
Okay, if I can follow up. But in general elections, they're still going to mail it out to everybody all the time.
Chair Simmons, Representative Beck, absolutely.
And in some of these special elections, you may mail it to the whole world. You may just, you have to mail it to everybody in that district or who's affected by that.
Chair Simmons, Representative Beck, you can use either language we've provided in the bill, or you can use the language that Mr. Marbet offered.
Just for the record, Mr. Chair,
Representative Beck,
everybody will receive a voter's pamphlet in the mail.
Chair Simmons, Representative Beck, we would mail to every residential box holder a voter's pamphlet.
Would this be the rule for future secretaries of state?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Beck,
I'd be happy to ask that question. Sure.
Chair Simmons, Representative Beck, we believe that that's what these laws would constitute, but I certainly can't answer for future secretaries of state.
Mr. Chair,
yeah. Mr. Williams,
I want to make sure I understand the point, Ms. Seelock. You don't have any objection to the amendments of the language that Mr. Marbet proposed to Section 15 to make that clear, do you?
Chair Simmons, Representative Williams, not at all. We would fully adopt that. That'd be fine by us.
We're not in work session, are we?
No, waiting to go into work session.
All right, well, I'll be quiet.
A little bit. And Rick and Devlin, do you have something?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment to Mr. Dyer that the reason that the fees changed back and the signatures changed back was that the House took action on the bill that would have done this at about 3:30 or 4 a.m. in the morning prior to Sarney die. And certain parties have loaded up the bill with a lot of other issues. And so, and that's how the higher fees sunset.
Thank you very much for allowing me to testify.
Thank you so much for coming today, Mr. Baird.
Okay, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 368 and open a work session on Senate Bill 368. Representative Williams?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would first move a conceptual amendment to the Ayn Gross Virgil bill by asking for a suspension of the rules to do so.
We have a request that we suspend the rules for purposes of conceptual amendment. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so moved.
Mr. Chairman, I would make a conceptual amendment to page 3 of the bill, line 26. After the word relevant, insert the language to the conduct of the election, period.
Colleagues, we have a motion before us to conceptually amend Bill 368, page 3, line 26, at the end of the sentence, as it was stated, add the words to the conduct of the election, period. Is there any objection to that motion? Hearing none, so moved.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Williams?
I'd ask again for a suspension of the rules if necessary to make another conceptual amendment with respect to Section 15.
Colleagues, we have a motion before us to request to suspend the rules for purposes of another conceptual amendment. Any objection? Hearing none, go ahead.
Chairman, I would amend simply the language in Section 15, and tell me if I'm not doing this with proper form, but I would simply substitute the language of Section 15 that has been the discussion the last few minutes with the language offered by Marbet in his testimony that is not objected to by the Secretary of State's office.
We have a motion before us to take the language in the offered by Mr. Marbet and word for word then.
I believe I don't see any reason to resubmit that if the Secretary of State's office is fine with it.
Colin Seelock, are you through digesting this? I'll give you just a moment, or do you want to...
Mr. Chair.
Ripping to Edwards.
I think we have to delete lines 14 through 16, which is referenced in Mr. Marbet. I think it's a motion, we need part of the motion to delete on page 7, lines 14 through 16.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Representative Regard. We would delete lines 14 through 16 of the current bill.
Right.
And go insert. Yep, concerns now. Well, I thought we had it so easy, but
no plan done.
Come on.
Chair Simmons, for the record, Colin Shulot, the Director of Elections. I always help to have clerks sitting beside you. One of the problems that we had in the 3rd Congressional District with mailing is we're not sure that we can generate a mailing list that just goes to the 3rd Congressional District because the district lines do not necessarily match zip codes. And so we would have to come up with a way of trying to figure out how we would mail it without paying. One of the ways we keep our cost down is we do not address it. It goes to residential box holders, and right, it's a saturation thing. And if we went to the registered voters in that county, then we would have to pay first class mailing, which would make the postage very high. I'm trying to think if there's any kind of flexible language, because we all agree with the concept. I don't think anybody's opposed.
Right.
We might want to.
Mr. Chairman, since we're conceptually amending, we don't have to actually have the exact words.
I would offer that this thing did work for 2 years, just as it's currently printed.
But, Mr. Chairman, conceptually, we would want it simply so that you could mail to the zip codes where an election was occurring, because unless you do that, you could not use the saturation mail rate. So you will have some overlap, you know, that will potentially go into other areas, but you're going to have that anyway because there's no way you can do it, I think, under postal guidelines for a saturation rate.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Other than you could go to an individual rural route if you wanted to determine it down to that level.
Sure. Representative Devlin, our first thought was zip codes, and the only place that it would cause problems is in those zip code areas that are not getting to vote on that race. You know, what we may want to be able to do then, and going back to the relevant stuff, we might put something in that kind of special edition saying you may not be eligible to vote for the race that this voter's pamphlet covers because we can, you know, to give them check with your county clerk to see if you're eligible to vote. But we could do it by zip code, but it would cause some confusion because there would be people who would not be eligible to vote for that race getting the pamphlet.
Mr. Chairman, if I might clarify,
Devlin,
your situation before, you ended up having to mail to the entire state, right? Or no? Or you chose not to and...
Chair Simmons, Representative Devlin, this particular language was not in the prior sunset of language. It wasn't a bill in the 97 legislature that was never adopted. But this language was new to the 97 legislature because of that problem. So when this occurred in the 3rd Congressional District, we could not print a voter's pamphlet because we had to mail. We would have had to mail it statewide.
So you did not do it.
So we did not do it.
Can there be just some conceptual language that you can limit it to the geographic area where an election is occurring? I think.
Representative Devlin.
It's not that
doesn't sound that difficult.
Chair, Vice Chair Star. Nothing's up there yet. Representative Devlin, what we would be more than happy to do is try to allow you to do it in such a way and then for us to meet with Legislative Council.
What I think we need to do is, I have a little bit of misgivings about this piece because it did work for 2 years, and unless we have exact wording, we can't adopt a conceptual amendment. So what we would need to do is set this over, and we do have another potential amendment before us. Representative Williams, if you would meet with Ms. Seelock and talk about this, Mr. Edwards, if you want to work on that also.
I got conceptual.
Okay, and Representative Wells, would you like to discuss potential amendments to the A4 amendments that you did bring forward?
Yeah, you go ahead. Yeah, my conceptual was to make sure that if we had a county that was providing a county pamphlet, that they would only... They would include their candidates, their issue in the county pamphlet and not in the state. That's what we're going to distinguish here in language. Okay?
So it would be limited to counties that...
Counties that do provide a pamphlet.
If the county does provide a pamphlet, the state pamphlet would not be available.
Well, A4 is going to allow the counties that do provide a pamphlet. Then we'll have the other conceptual to our... We'll get the amendment to take care of the rest of the language. Okay?
Would you be signing us to withdraw your motion? Suspension?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I will withdraw my motion to suspend the rules.
Okay. And we have that respond in. And we will carry this over to another day. Tuesday, we'll post it up again. Hopefully, we can discuss it at that point. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill C-68. If you know other business for the committee, we are adjourned.
No, that's, we haven't taken care of that. Not clean.